Good morning. It's a bright, sunny day. Not really rainy and cloudy, but that's okay. Still a great day. Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, KCNR 1460, home of Shasta Reading.
Hey guys, how about that election? the tsunami did happen to stop at California, but you know what? I saw some interesting little stats the other day. 63 House seats nationwide, 6 Senate seats, 19 states switched from basically liberal to conservative representation, and 680 state legislative seats were gained by conservatives.
So we gained conservative seats all across the nation, and in California, we gave them all back. How nice of us.
Obviously, we have a little bit of work to do. I had my brother lives down in the Bay Area, and he was absolutely, well, my other brother lives in Texas, so of course he was gloating. But my brother in the Bay Area is like, I'm selling my house, I'm leaving. And I keep stressing to them that you have to actually do something.
Yeah.
You can't just sit home, be mad, send emails, and be mad. And
then back up.
Yeah, and watch the news and be mad. You have to actually do something. You're going to have to actually get off the couch. You're going to have to find something. Mm-hmm. Find something. It doesn't have to, you don't have to, you know, spend your entire 24 hours a day doing it, but connect with something.
And Aaron, you know, with all of our groups throughout Northern California and Southern Oregon that we've grown over the last several months, the thing that keeps people going and keeps the groups growing is the engagement and actually having project-oriented involvement. That's the key. You have to have something to sink your teeth into.
Absolutely. And that's, I guess that's been our focus from the very beginning, because if we're not doing something, if it's just about talking about the problem, one day we'll probably fix the problem, and then there'll be nothing to do.
Well, and you know, even though we are in California, and that was a really disappointing chain of events, you know, word on the street is that we've made great grounds nationwide, and it was very positive. And California will come around, too. It's just going to take a little bit longer. And, folks, we didn't get to where we're at overnight, and we can't fix it overnight.
Unfortunately. That Staples Easy Button is actually fake.
Sally, they really don't work.
No, Sally bought us one at a yard sale. We tried it, and it said, you know, that was easy, but then nothing happened. So, yeah, unfortunately, we are back to square one. We're working with Doug LaMalfa's office, our new senator. We're also working with Jim Nielsen's office, Wally Herger's office, and the Howard Jarvis Taxpayer Group. We've got some interesting stuff coming up, trying to work on projects and partnerships that we can actually help with. Since up here in the North State, if you look at the voting, if you haven't done this, it's really worthwhile. Go to the Secretary of State's website. It's SOS, like secretaryofstate.ca.gov. And when you look at the Secretary of State's website, you can see the breakdown by county. And you can see exactly what's happening in the state. I've had people say, well, we need to, you know, form the state of Jefferson. We just need to take the northern part of the state. But I think if you look at that map, what you're going to find is you'd need to take the eastern part of the state, which is, I don't know, kind of difficult and not probably what most people think. So,
and the coastal areas, and that's always a little interesting. So,
yeah,
not as easy as the sounds.
The coast would be
its
own state, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I can hear somebody out there going, "Make them their own country." So, you know, what do you do?
So we've got, let's tell the folks a little bit about how many groups we have grown over the last several months and where we're located. And we can talk a little bit about some of our action groups and sort of demonstrate why we've had so much progress in this area, and especially developing relationships with our elected officials. I mean, over the past several months, we started with 35 people in a pizza parlor in Reading, and we now have, what, a dozen groups, six counties?
Okay, thanks.
You're going to read them off?
Thanks for stalling for time. I was bringing them up on the computer. I always leave somebody out. Let's see. So we started in Reading. I'm not going to go in the order. I'll just go in the order they're listed on the site. But you have Reading. You got the Igo Ono area. You've got Red Bluff, Corning, Fall River. Fall River and Burney, they switch back and forth, same group. Alturas, Mount Shasta, Wairika, Lookout, Now, anybody tells me that they can't grow a group in their town, Lookout has 105 people. So just stop that.
50 belong to the Tea Party.
Yeah, just stop that right now. You can build a group in your town. It doesn't have to be fancy. Weaverville, we're working on Weaverville. We have a lot of people with interest, but they live so spread out, we're having a little trouble getting that put together. Chester is out there moving right along. They're called Almanor Basin Tea Party. We've been working with the Yuba City Group. They were kind of going before, and then we sort of used our template with them to help them get more productive. Crescent City over there with the Del Norte Tea Party Patriots, they did a ton of work this last election cycle. Those guys were literally...
They're unbelievable.
Yeah, they were the boots on the ground in their community. And also Klamath Falls, Oregon. We've done a bunch of work with those guys up there. They actually did an amazing job with voter fraud in their primary. I don't know if they busted up their voter fraud up there, but it was interesting. The primary election this time was totally different than all their other elections because the results made sense to them, and they were plugged into it. So
yeah.
They think they had a little bit of an issue there with the voting. And we've worked with the five groups up in the Bend area, Bend, Oregon.
And, you know, one nice thing about what we're doing and what any of these individual groups is doing is that they create a template that can easily be duplicated anywhere, not just with the groups that we currently have, but any group in any state, anywhere in the nation that has an inkling of what they'd like to do. You know, the template has been built, and the successes are there, and real easy to duplicate those things.
Absolutely. So now we're working to help the guys in California. We have a little bit of a plan coming, and as that develops, we'll give you guys a heads up. Just wanted to let you know, next week, we're talking about politics for the younger set. The one thing we hear the most is, you know, why is everybody old? It's like,
Yeah, and
I'm 49, that's not that old.
And the thing is that a lot of the older folks that are involved in this movement truly are concerned about the youth because they know with the way things are coming down, it's the young people in their teens, 20s, 30s that are going to get hit the hardest. So these folks really care, and they're concerned about why the youth is not getting involved in some of these big issues that are coming down around their ears. So
and a lot of them are concerned. They just either don't have time to plug in. That's a big factor. They're not necessarily into joining things. They kind of look at some of this and go, oh, I don't know, maybe not for me. So next week we want to hear from those folks. We have Derek Wright who's coming into the station with us.
Yep, he's going to be our co-host, 19 years old, has actually been involved. He's attended our rallies, comes to our meetings, so he's got a pretty good handle on what's going on and what we do, and so he's going to sit in here next Sunday and kind of co-host with us and give us the youth perspective.
Yeah, and since we all know that we picked up an hour, it'll really be 9 o'clock, you know, next week. Your body won't have changed, you know, so tell these people they get their kids up early. So what if it's Sunday morning? We want to hear from them and know what's going on there. Then the week after, on the 21st, we have Kevin McGarry. His name might not be familiar to you, but I would really encourage you to Google him. He wrote a book called Instanity, which is a cross between instant and insanity. He was a member, I don't know if he still is, but member of ACLU, ACLU, mm-hmm. NAACP, you know, hardcore Democrat for a long time, and then looked at what was going on with the policies. And I didn't bring the book with me today, but on the back, the one thing that really was really striking to me is he says that the policies of the Democratic Party have literally enslaved the people in the inner city, and that's the message he brings. It's a fairly strong message. I think he'll either like it or hate it, which is always kind of cool.
Yeah, but another perspective and
so that's,
you know,
the
great
21st.
Great way to look at things, too.
Yep, we wanted him to come up and speak at one of our meetings, but we thought, hey, since he's tied up through the end of the year, we'll have him on the radio. So let's see, we need to kick over to Bill Dennison, and Bill is there. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
So it's a great day in Chico.
Is the wind ripping the grass off your lawn?
It is, and it's blowing leaves in my backyard, but all's well.
There you go. Well, why don't you tell people a little bit about your background, and then we'll head into the topic we're going to hit with you.
Okay, I've been in part of the forest products industry since 1950, from a cat skinner, logging company, to a Plumas County supervisor. I was raised in logging camps such as Butte Meadows and Middle Valley in Plumas County, and sawmill towns such as Sterling City, who no longer have mills. I served 11 years as a county, Plumas County supervisor in the Lake Elmore area, the area you just wanted to start a tea party here in.
Which is how we met.
Yeah, exactly. Well, during that same period, 11 years, I was a Sierra Cascade Logging Conference Executive Director in Reading, 2 years as a Director of Pacific Forest Institute at William Jessup University. But I spent a great deal of my career as California Forestry Association President and CEO, 22 years with them until 1994, and I resigned to move back into my more familiar rural habitat. Graduated from the University of Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, with a Bachelor of Science degree in forestry. So I'm a forester by profession.
And political.
Well, politically, I've been active since 1971, when I would say that I really got involved in participation in the local, state, and federal levels, where I was directly involved with the Endangered Species Act, Northern Spotted Owl, wilderness bills, fighting for private property rights, and attempting to minimize the many restrictions on the forest products industry that have been presented under the guise of saving the environment. My interest in electing sound-thinking people to all levels of government probably started about 45 years ago. More recently, Aaron, I was involved in starting a website 2 years ago called The Unsilent Majority. What's the same as you're trying to do and are doing so well on your with the Tea Party? We were a little earlier in that, but it was to assist individuals and groups in keeping up with the accelerated changes that were promised by Senator Obama in his presidential campaign. So I kept what I called a scoreboard for the website that recorded the major and minor changes that Obama, his czars, and administration were proposing and or implementing as well that was driving our nation out of a republic to what I believe is a socialistic state. And so I became interested in that and then more probably into where we're headed now is in my involvement with the Harry Reid election.
Yeah, no, a lot of people followed, and that, just to kind of let people know, we wound up on the phone talking about building a tea party up in Chester, and you connected us with some folks up there, and we were able to help them get started. But we had never met. Meanwhile, you moved to Chico, and a couple of weekends ago, we wind up on the bus to Sacramento working on the Dan Lundgren campaign, and right before you get dropped off, it's like, I'm Bill Dennison. I thought, get out of here. And
the reason I did, I was eavesdropping. I think I apologized for that, and I said, excuse me, I'm Bill Dennison, I'm eavesdropping. I want you to know that, but I'm very interested in what you're saying. You seem to have a quick group up there, you and I guess it was your husband Bill and another gentleman across the way, and so I wanted to be part of your conversation, so that's how we got
that's
started.
Right. It's like, you're Bill Dennison, but I knew you had worked a lot on the Sharon Angle campaign, and now that that is done, I thought people might be really interested to know what was going on over there, how that worked, and how you wound up getting involved. I know people sent money and supported and all that, but I don't know anybody else who actually went there and actually worked there.
Yeah, I'd be pleased to do that. Like our political defeats in California, I don't have a lot of answers to why Sharon Angle did not defeat Reid. I had a lot of faith in her, still do. But mostly along the way, I'd like to also explore what happened during the election process. I think we learned a great deal, Nevada and here as well. We've got to remember that one battle lost is, or one doesn't determine the war results. We all say that, but we don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And Aaron, as I know you agree, we can't be discouraged. We've got to continue our active participation beginning right now. And so that's the philosophy that I'm using, developing from our loss in Nevada and also here in California. But back to why I got involved. My interest began with the Nevada seat because it was obvious that the triune of Obama, Pelosi, and Reid had to be broken. 5 months ago, when I first started this, I would never have thought that we would change the House representation enough that we could get rid of Pelosi that way. Obama, of course, was going to be there until 2012, so I turned my attention to Senator Reid as the weakest link in that triangle. I deemed that he was beatable because he'd been known as very corrupt, and he appeared to be very disliked in Nevada at that time, and I really thought that his manner of pushing the health bill through the Senate against all the public opposition would still be vivid in the minds of voters. So with that, I initiated a small group in Chester area, Lake Elmer, and we simply called ourselves the Sharon Angle for Senate. Our goal was to meet with some, if not all, the 8 opponents at that time to read and recommend one of the Republicans to develop what we call the California Coalition to beat Reid. And my belief at that time was anybody but Reid.
Yeah,
we went over
no
to
kidding.
Visit Danny Tarkini. You remember he was part of the race.
That's right.
In Carson City, and he seemed like a viable candidate, although not very experienced in politics and even in work. He's an attorney, but mostly works for the Tarkini Foundation. But after that trip, we decided, talking to Sue Loudon by telephone and others, that we ought to wait and see what the Nevadans were really going to choose. They would choose. They should be the best to come up with their candidate. So they did, and a couple weeks after Sharon Angle won the primary, I arranged a meeting with her at her Reno home, and 3 of us met to ask questions, and we were really digging. We wanted to know the truth about the Reid accusations. Was she against Social Security? Was she going to cause a turmoil in Medicare and Medicaid and other things? And so we went there, not favoring her, but saying we really want to know. And about an hour into the meeting, Sharon convinced us that she had the ability to win. If she had a good campaign team, and she had the Scott Brown team helping her, and adequate campaign funds. Our questions and the answers that she gave led me to understand that Reid was pushing the big lie that he's so common, he commonly uses in his everyday activities. But her quickness to grasp an issue, Aaron, and respond intellectually under pressure led me to suggest that if she could just get a debate with Reid, that she could win. Well, she got the debate. She didn't think she could, but she got the debate towards the end of the campaign, and she won that hands down. Now, the fact is, Sharon Angle didn't win the election. We can't understand it, really, because the day before, she was 4 points up in that election, and then she lost by 5 points. So somehow or another, the polls were off 9 points. That's unusual.
Are they still looking at that bill? I heard that there might have been some union activity, and possibly they were looking for some ballots that hadn't been counted. Is that anything that you might know about?
I do somewhat. I'm going to not speculate on the reasons so much for loss. That can best be probably left to the political pundits. And I think that more important, there possibly is going to be a lawsuit. I had a friend who was one of the poll observers, and he said that they brought busloads of iron workers, union workers, into the polls late in the evening. Everyone's pointing also to the fact that in the Las Vegas and Grant County, the lights went out and the electricity went off, and the polling was held up for a while until everybody could get their turn. So there were some irregularities. What they will amount to, we'll see in the future. But I think it's important, Aaron, that we respond to some Monday morning quarterbacks who may be saying, for any reason, the Nevada race wasn't worth our time investment. The California race may not have been, they might say, is not worth our time investment. And for those who didn't invest in the campaign to beat Reid, or didn't invest in the campaign, by investment I mean money and time, in the California elections that we lost, they have no license to second guess. Yeah, they're going to have an opportunity to try again, and I hope they do. But for Reid, it's 6 long years more of Harry Reid. Mm-hmm. I want to thank those who did participate, the $5, the $10, the $500, and the $1,000 or more. And more than that, those who went to their friends and family to participate, I say, I thank you very much. So
My dad actually moved over there. We sent 2 voters. our family pitched in 2 votes.
Yeah. Well, I think that we need to view Nevada election the same as our own dismal California outcome. those two states defied the understanding of the rest of the nation. California elected proven socialist governor, yep. lieutenant governor, a senator, the same liberal state legislature. You know? And for those who say only in California and say, well, nothing can be done, I don't believe it. It can be done. We've got to start on that now. And we don't quit. We've got to ask, what do we do to turn the ship around? And we've got to continue just to exactly what you're doing, to develop good leadership and strategies that are understandable. And so I think to that end, we also need to emulate what you're doing up there and the other key parties, that we maintain our civility. We can be aggressive without being obnoxious. I sometimes have difficulty with that myself, but we can. But I think, Aaron, we also have to put an end to this acceptance of political correctness. You know, the tendency to go along to get along, that hasn't worked, it's not going to work, and we shouldn't accept that attitude from those who we sent to D.C.
What would you, since our next topic next week is the kind of the younger set that may or may not vote, but typically doesn't get super involved. What would you say to those of us that are trying to encourage them, and what would you say to people who are kind of looking at California and going, ugh, why try? I'm just going to move away.
Well, I first would say have a little bit of understanding where they are at this time. Remember where we were mm-hmm. at that age. We were busy. We were building our careers. So in this case, many were just trying to find work. Didn't have that difficulty when I was coming up in my career. But they are. They have families the same as we had. Many of them have the interest. They don't have the time. They don't have the money. And most of all, they don't have the background and the knowledge. So the best we can do is when we meet them, rather than say, well, you dummies, why aren't you voting? Say, you know, we understand. What can we do to help you? How can we, what is it you need to know? And give them that as a start. There are many of them that really want to help. I did run across one young fellow who I know is bright. And he told me before the election, asking if he was going to vote. He said no. I said, buddy, you kidding me, Brian? Why? He said, I don't like any of them. Well, we've got to get them over that hump so they understand they may not like them, but there are some that are better than others, and if they don't for any of them, you generally get the worst. Good examples here in California. So be understanding, but don't give up on them, because they are a very intelligent group. Here in California, if you're around Chico, we have heavy to liberalism, and it's, as you noted, over on the coast, there's a whole blue strip there, a blue strip in Southern California. But with understanding and help, we can turn this around, and we need their help.
Absolutely. And so now you are down in Chico permanently?
Yes, well, as permanent as you can be at 76.
You're very young, 76. Hey, I'm getting some questions on the chat here about the web address for the Unsilent Majority.
You know, that has been, we suspended it because Ooh. Of lack of interest. We can still bring up, what I'll do, you can't get into the website as much as could before, as easy as you could before. Let me do this. They're no longer going to be putting anything new into it, but you can get the background we had. What
okay.
I had on my scoreboard, what we had as our goals. And so what I'll do is I'll send that to you.
Okay. And we'll put that up for people a little bit later. Actually, we'll have Robert add it to the archive of the show. So if you go to teapartymedia.net in another few days, we'll have that added on there for you.
And Bill,
my webpage, I don't have a webpage address, but I'd be pleased to have those who wish to contact me. I have a large email group that I use, and I like to correspond that way and always invite counter arguments or discussions on my email. And so I'd like to give that to those who are interested for further comments.
Fire away.
That's Dennison, Dennison, @ DigitalPath, DigitalPath, Path, PATH, all one word, .net.
And Bill, not to get completely off track, but my husband is a forester as well, got his degree at Humboldt State, and has been in the forestry industry for 30 years. He's on your email address, and he knows you. But what is what's the future of the forestry and timber industry in the state of California?
Much of the future depended upon federal timberland, and that has been deleted as far as the future goes. So we're not going to be able to get a sustainable outcome from them. Not that the timber's not there. It's there. But those who want to protect the forest, the environmentalists they call themselves, would rather see it utilized naturally by burning. And so we're not logging. We're not thinning. And we're getting a lot of burns, as you've noticed on both sides of you, over on the coast and up in the Sierra Nevadas. That's going to be to continue the future of the U.S. Forest Service timberlands, our public lands. I don't think that's going to be turned around very soon. We have the private timberlands, and we're thankful for those. Much of them owned by Sierra Pacific Industries. We're doing a great job in their forestry activity, and they'll continue. But we're going to see more mills go out of business here in California as time goes on for two reasons. Availability of the timber. Not the timber not available out there. It's just not accessible because of restrictions or restrictions being put on by the state of California and total restrictions being put on because of environmental pressures to the U.S. Forest Service. But it's also we're going to find that the mills are going to be, I think, closing and moving in some cases just because of more and more restrictions and business in California in general. It's just too tough to do business. There's a small remanufacturing plant that I got a call from the owner saying that they've been being sued by Cal Trout because of a minor infraction, and he's going to shut the mill down. Because it's just not worth it.
Wow.
To fight the system. And that's been the history for the past 25 years, I guess. It's been getting worse. And as you know, the mills have gone under for the past 20 years, so we have a relatively few left. But I don't have high hope for the future of our forest products industry increasing at all. And I hope that it doesn't decrease too much because our industry provides a lot of jobs, a lot of opportunities for young people, and certainly jobs for those who've been with the forest products industry for years. We've got a great mill up in Weaverville that burned, and people are getting that back online, and that's a great thing. And so
it's
not very optimistic.
It certainly killed a lot of communities when the mills went down. We lived over in Eureka at the time, and we watched, you know, the Redwood Park come in, and, you know, one of the mills went down and the other one went down. Now you go over there, it's virtually a ghost town.
And, you know, if you look at the trickle-down theory, if you think about every single business that's impacted by the lack of the timber industry, especially the housing industry, I mean, everything from doorknobs to, you know, screen doors, I mean, anything that has anything to do with building a home, I mean, it affects so many people.
Well, you know, we can talk just about that being a factor for the forest products industry, but actually it impacted a lot of other industries, the mining industry, the cattlemen, the farmers, the developers, and the, what I call the big E's, the environmentalists, took these groups on one at a time, and woe is us, we weren't able to bring all those entities together to fight the battle at the same time. So, we were picked off one at a time, the low fruit first, and finally the point where the restrictions are so great that there's no wonder that business is leaving California and won't come back until we change the attitudes and the regulations here in the state.
Absolutely. Hey, Bill, thanks for being with us this morning, and obviously we need to have you on again later because I know everybody's going, well, this guy knows a lot of stuff.
Yeah, thanks so much.
So we need to get your repertoire back online here with us. We've got to take a little break here, and when we come back, hopefully we'll be right on track. We'll be talking to our new Senator Doug LaMalfa, and then we're going to move on to some things about veterans. So that's what's coming up.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Bye.
You are listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, home of Free Fire Media.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're joining We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party at KCNR 1460 Shasta Reading. Don't forget, if you want to call in, 605-4567 or www.kcnr1460.com to join our chat room. And I believe we have Doug LaMalfa, our new senator, on the line.
Good morning, Senator.
How are you doing? How's it going?
We're just doing swell. We keep forgetting to give out the phone number, though, so Elizabeth gets a smart pill kudos this morning.
Yeah, we encourage people to call in, but you're going to have to look up the number yourself.
Or divine that by, right?
Yeah, you have to wake up and have a vision in order to call the show.
Yeah.
We try to make it as hard as possible.
Well, those without a vision will perish, right?
Yeah, true. There you go.
That's true. We got a lot of perishing going on out there. Hey, So I was chatting with you yesterday about these propositions, and 23, I know everybody wants to know now that didn't go, what's the outcome on that? And then the other thing is 25 wasn't good, but 26 was like a countermeasure, and I don't think most people knew that.
Yeah, it's interesting, the psychology of the voters here. 23, it's pretty basic. There just wasn't the force, the resources put behind the pro side, because it was a very simple question. Should we delay implementation of CO2 regulations until the economy recovers? It has nothing to do with big polluters or big oil or big taxes or, big dairies, anything else. It has to do with carbon dioxide. And so the opposition painted a good picture of it'll cause all this new pollution. Well, CO2 is a naturally occurring substance, and we'll save that CO2 being at a pollutant debate for another day. But I personally don't believe it's any more a pollutant than water is. So, I mean, water can be found poisonous there.
in quantity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, another debate for another day. But the Prop 23. Debate for voters of California means that they will have to suffer more with job losses and the economy not recovering because nobody's producing anything here for 2 to 4 more years before they take it up again. I don't know that the electorate will be ready to embrace in only 2 years another Prop 23, because it will probably just take a little longer for the full effects to be known and quantified of the AB 32 bill we're talking about. So it's probably a 4-year deal, especially since you'd have to start right now with qualifying the next AB 23 or Prop 23 pretty soon. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't know that the 2-year cycle is the one that's going to be ready for the next Prop 23.
And Doug,
so,
do you know what the cost is, or the anticipated cost per family in California in increase in electricity per year?
Depending on how many different things are done to offset it, but potentially, it's in the thousands of dollars per year. Average family could see $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. Does this mean that nuclear power is embraced instead? If nuclear power came to the rescue, well, that would, in terms of electricity production, it would offset the effects on electricity. But if they keep going the path they're going, we're not even allowed to import hydroelectric power as part of the renewable power grid. And Jerry Brown's already talking in with the other leadership down there, we got to push this 33% renewable thing when 20%, these are mandates that all electricity in California, 33% of it would have to become coming from renewable sources. Right now the mandate is 20. We haven't even reached the 20 yet, and they already want to push it to the next level. Renewable mean wind, solar, and perhaps geothermal. They don't like hydro. They definitely don't like nuke. So, your energy costs, depending on the whim of the legislature on things like nuclear power, could dramatically go up. If we're not allowed nuke as a good source, then, it could be $4,000 a year easily for higher electricity costs to the consumer at their home, as well as on the goods they buy in the manufacturing and marketplace.
Gosh, it's a good thing everybody got an extra hour's sleep last night to handle that little piece of good news this morning.
Yeah.
a little much, I suppose. But,
No, I mean, it's amazing that this is even happening. I wanted to just point out, or have you point out, that this AB 32, the California cap and trade that was passed 4 years ago, does have a provision in there that the governor can set that aside, correct?
Yes, Governor Whitman could have set that aside.
Yeah, and that was why she didn't really support Prop 23. Her plan was to just set it aside without putting anything else over it. What are the odds that Jerry Brown, in the interest of the economy of California, will set it aside until we have some kind of economic recovery?
I was drinking milk a little while ago. I'm not now.
Sorry.
You would have spit it out?
You got a little,
what you're saying?
Got a sinus,
the milk out of the nose lap, yeah.
Yeah.
So, seriously, I don't see him even touching that with a 10-foot pole because he has his, environmental resume he has to maintain, and this is a mantra thing. This is a holy grail for people, and so he won't be suspending it until it comes under the most extreme of conditions on jobs and economy. And so instead, they'll just run up the green flag or the green jobs up the flagpole and say, "We'll get more green jobs." So,
yeah.
You know, I'm in the business of John Deere green jobs, and
that makes you a gross polluter now. So, you know, that whole farming thing, you guys.
You know, that eating stuff is kind of a problem.
Yeah, frustrating. So, yeah. Well, I guess a lot of what we heard leading up to the primary and the general election was that people were frustrated with their candidate choices. They didn't, and then after the primary, they didn't feel Meg Whitman was conservative enough, and blah blah blah. And the message that we kept trying to put out was that the same message we learned from Sam Paredes, you know. He pointed it out very succinctly that Meg Whitman will probably work with us in some part. Jerry Brown will work with us zero.
Yeah.
So those were really, that's what voters really should have been considering.
It is a choice. I mean, I think ideologically we make the best choices we can in the primary, and then, you know, we're, like it or not, we're in a two-party system in the state. I don't always like that either. But you're basically, in most cases, down to two choices after the primary is over with. So, you know, I encourage everybody, exercise your ideological rights and goals in the primary. But when it's over with, you got to take a really sober look at what the top two choices are.
Yeah, sometimes it's
who's going to be in that position.
Sometimes it's about who you want to keep out, not who you want to get in.
Yeah, and I know that some might say that's cynical, or, you know, I know many people are just really, really tired of the, well, I'm tired of picking the lesser of two evils. Like, it's still evil. Yeah, but we're not in a perfect system. You know, the people choose who they elect, and so the people chose in the primary who they wanted, you know, and in the case of the last presidential, they chose Senator McCain. They chose Senator Obama on the two sides. And so would we be better off as a country under Senator McCain as president? I think we'd be quite a bit better. You know, there's certainly plenty of things you can find. We have to really be pragmatic along with our idealism in the runoff. And that means we have to work harder to be sure we put the right candidates forward to begin with. So I look at this whole thing as a two-year cycle that just ended Tuesday. The new cycle started Wednesday of holding government and electeds accountable and starting that farm team of who are the right candidates that we can be proud of after the next primary in 2012 that we're attracted to. And so once that primary is over with, then we're back to the choice of hopefully good versus bad, or good versus mediocre, or even mediocre versus bad. And you just have to, you have to really wrestle with that on your own and decide what you can live with. Because in this case here, we've had 2 years of Obama, and it's killing us.
Absolutely. And, you know, just in case anybody was confused, perfection isn't the goal. Perfect is the enemy of the good. Talk to us about 25 and 26, because we've got to click over onto our final topic here before we wind up against the wall here. And Linda came in this morning early, so we don't want to jip her. She's actually been here the whole time.
Do these two props basically cancel each other out? Or can you
in a way
that?
They do. I mean, the voters have, and the work the voters have done in previous years, going all the way back to Prop 13 and 78, has kind of set the course that with enough protections, you know, we can weather Prop 25. So Prop 26 was the latest in addition to, what was it, 218 a few years ago, and a Prop 1A. There's two different Prop 1As that limited the state from stealing trans dollars, transportation, and local government dollars. Prop 42 did the same. I think it was 218, Prop 13. Lately, it was Prop 26. And that says two-thirds vote required to raise my fees. And so I think the voters are trying to handcuff the legislature enough from just going after their money and saying, go ahead and pass the budget on the simple majority, and we're going to penalize you if you don't get it done on time. So that was the message of Prop 25, and I get that at the voters' level. Unfortunately, the no on 25 side, which I was part of, that message wasn't funded well enough or didn't get across that Prop 25 doesn't fix anything. It instead, you know, the part about penalizing the legislators for a late budget, all they have to do is throw a shell budget, a sham budget, on the governor's desk, which can be done by a simple majority, in this case only the Democrats, 41 plus 21 votes, and they can throw something on the desk, and that is off their back.
So that whole thing,
they no longer have to worry
paid.
About being late. They're not late now.
Okay.
They've thrown something out there, and that that onus is off their back. So now they can go back and wrestle. Well, the governor vetoed it, you know. So
People were excited. You think people probably voted for that because they were excited that that it had language in there that they were going to punish the legislature for not passing a budget on time.
That's always a popular thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So punish the legislature and make it be on time. Well, who ideally doesn't want an on-time budget? Even the legislators do. But it's a philosophical issue, Reach versus Dems down there, that are we going to do a budget that is a phony one or raises taxes or spends money we don't have? And so Republicans hold out from, based on their principles, no, this budget has too much of this or that. Dems, they hold out because they don't want to cut the things that they promised everybody. So that's why it takes a long time, and I'm glad we have that debate. It's very unfortunate and very annoying to real people that it takes so long to do it. We should be able to have that debate in January, February, March, and get something done on time. So the voters voted to penalize, the voters voted for on time, but they really didn't have the full picture of the on time part is a phony deal, and that the harmful effects of, for rural California especially, is that rural legislators, which are generally Republican, can largely be ignored and our issues left out of the budget unless they extract things out of us, you know, via basically blackmail. Blackmailing us into a tax increase to say, well, you know, you may not get your money for your firefighters up there, your money for your cities, or your money for rural roads unless you guys go along with this new tax increase, which the voters have said they want two-thirds votes on. So we've been put in a even more of a disadvantage by Prop 25, I think, in rural California. So we'll have to fight smart. And
we were talking about a plan yesterday, working on the vote safe and some other things. So we're going to have you come back on a different day so that we can focus on that, if that's okay with you.
And yeah, I'd be happy to. But, you know, take this as a positive. There was a very conservative message sent by the voters in those propositions,
yeah.
Even if the nine statewide candidates were a washout, with the possible exception of Attorney General, which he did pop ahead here.
Yeah.
But they rejected the taxes. They rejected the legislature taking back the redistricting process. So you could say 7 out of 9 of those propositions were a win,
mm-hmm.
in a way.
Absolutely.
In a conservative message by the voters.
Well,
and the others, you know, they probably just didn't have the information they needed. So, you know, there is something to see as a silver lining or as a bit of hope out there for California when they talk about just nuts and bolts, dollars and cents. They get emotional on candidates, but on those issues they did pretty well this time, actually. So
we're going to work on that emotional thing.
Yep.
Well, thanks for clearing this up for us. We really appreciate you calling in.
Well, I hope it helped.
And
we'll talk to you again.
We'll chat some more later. Have a good one.
Goodbye, right. Senator.
All right. So now we're going to hear
Veterans Week. Lots of stuff going on.
Hit it, Linda.
Linda's going to tell you what we've got going on at the Tea Party.
Okay, I will try to do this really quick since we have another caller on the line. So
that's all right. When you want to take a break, we'll pull him in, and it'll be perfect.
Okay. Well, to start with, we started a food drive this month from the 1st to the 29th for the veterans. We have teamed up with AmVets Post 4. They're helping with that, along with Missing in America Project. So if you all could just stop by one of our drop-off locations, we have 13 of them located throughout the city, that would be great. Also this week, there's Gary Douglas coming in, and he'll be at Tobacco and Brew on the 8th, 9th, and 10th. And he will help veterans, especially the young veterans, with discussing and filing their claims for their benefits. So that's a really good thing. On November 11th, at the cemetery, of course, we have the observance at 10:55, and they've got a huge program going out there.
Yeah, I've heard, I haven't attended yet, but very moving.
Yes, and they're going to have flyover this year and lot of different things, so that would be really good. If you could find time to go out there and participate in that. Also, we have Christmas for the Troops coming on November 20th. That's a really fun program. That's where you, for $12, you can buy a ticket. And you get dinner and dancing, and then you help package boxes to go overseas to the troops.
And how many do they have this year, Linda?
We're shooting for 500.
Not bad.
Yeah, last year we did 250. This year we're shooting for 500. It's a blast. And
basically, your $12 for your dinner basically pays for the postage to ship the packages.
Correct. That is the only reason they're asking for the $12, mm-hmm. so we can get the packages overseas.
Excellent.
So if there's anybody that has a family member in the service that is overseas, if we could get their address so we make sure that they get a Christmas package, that would be great.
Wonderful.
And they can send that to... How about we make that veterans at readingteaparty.com?
That would be great.
That will go to Linda Kent, our fearless member, who always takes care of our veterans issues because she's super smart on that.
That's her thing. She does a great job for us.
Okay, and then I also wanted to let everybody know about the movies coming. There's a movie Friday night at Cascade, and the proceeds for that will go for the chapel out in Igo. And then Saturday, there's another movie and at the Cascade Theater. So just before that movie, there will be a 21-gun salute at the Civic Center.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Yeah.
We've got a great veterans community up here. Well, thank you. Does that wrap it up for you?
Yeah, I think that pretty well gets it. There was a picnic scheduled today at 1 o'clock down at the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Anderson, but... Ooh. With the weather, I'm not sure what's going on with that. So,
well, they can always maybe call somebody in Anderson that lives there and find out if it's there.
All right, we've got Jeff Nelson on the phone, and I'm going to have Linda introduce him.
Okay, this is Jeff, and he's with the Patriot Guard Riders. I guess we have him on the line. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging on so long, Jeff. Busy morning.
Nope. No problem. It's a cell phone, and it's free on weekends.
Excellent. You don't care, then.
Anyway.
So tell us what you
here,
guys do.
Patriot Guard and Missing in America Project, we have a veteran food program that we do every Sunday morning. So I'm down here in the rain and cold and wind, and we've got about 20 veterans lined up, and we're providing them nourishment for the week. Some of the local businesses are donating the food, and then we're able to gather it all together for a Sunday program. But I wanted to thank Patriot Guard, Reading Tea Party Patriots for the event they allowed me to talk to on last Monday for the Joshua Munns Memorial.
The bench that you guys are putting in?
Yeah. And... you allowed me to give them a little spiel about who Joshua was and what it's all about, and we were very impressed with the generosity of the Tea Party members.
Well, you know, Jeff, you had us in tears.
It's a very sad, unfortunate event for a very brave young man from Anderson, so he deserves all we can for him, and
definitely
through your generosity. And then another event I had with the greeters, Anderson greeters at the park, we put a little barbecue on for them, and between the two events, we've got enough money to complete the mission.
Great. Hey, Jeff, we only have a couple of minutes left. Give our listeners a real brief description of what the Patriot Guard Riders do.
Well, way back about 3 years ago, there was a protest group that was protesting the death of our young soldiers when they returned for their burial service. And so some of the veterans, American Legion and so forth, would try to intercept those people and keep them away from the family, and that developed into the Patriot Guard Riders. So now there's like about 200,000 Patriot Guard Riders all across the nation. And we not only do the killed in action young troops coming back, but we also honor our older veterans when they pass on. And we offer, at invitation from the family, we will escort them to the place of internment, usually it's IGO. And we're there to honor the veteran and to support the family. And then we also do welcome homes. When we get a troop coming back from overseas deployment, at the family's request, we'll meet them at the airport or wherever and give them a welcome home.
Well, we wanted to just remind folks that the food drive that the Reading Tea Party is doing through the month of November, the Remember in November food drive, goes to benefit the food pantry that you're currently working with this morning. So when people see that, the Reading Tea Party food drive, it's going to the project that you're currently working on.
Very good, yeah. It's a growing endeavor. Word of mouth, of course, is the best way, and we're getting more and more our veterans that are in need of these foods to show up. And then we have members where we have veterans that are unable to, due to limited mobility, to come down here, and if they get in touch with us, one of our members will gather up food for them and deliver it to their homes.
Now, Jeff, we're wrapping up real quick here. Could you give the folks out there a way to contact you if they want more information about the Patriot Guard Riders?
Yeah, my cell phone is most easy way to contact me is 410-3324.
Okay. Great, Jeff.
Jeff Nelson at 410-3324.
And folks, I know for a fact, because I've called Jeff more than once, say it twice and say it slow.
All
thanks,
right,
Jeff.
You guys.
Have
we
a great
have,
day.
We have knocked out another hour here on Daylight Savings Time. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Chester Reading, the home of Free Fire Media. This was We the People.
Tune in next week.